So let's just start with a little bit about you. Tell us about yourself, your work as a Catholic educator and with Sunday to Sunday and all that good stuff.
Great. Thanks, Dave. I want to say that I have been really privileged to be able to work with generally all ages. I started out with elementary school religious education, and I moved to high school where I feel incredibly comfortable. And as I've gone forward in my career, I work with adults now. So really from preschool through through our age.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about your work that you did, both in, say, counseling, marriage and family counseling, compassion work. You've done a lot with, say, interreligious type of work too, kind of pulling from other different faith traditions. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to kind of fill in.
Well, I'll just start by saying at a very young age, I felt that I was called. Maybe about the age of 16, I began to feel a really great urging to towards the church. And I did not really fully understand, as most young people don't. It wasn't a direct call to becoming a sister or working in that field, but my heart lit up when I would be invited to a retreat. And it, especially with my connection with the Blessed Mother, at a young age, I was asked to play her in a play that toured all over California and Nevada. And I will say that was a gift of a lifetime, and certainly to my faith, because with that opportunity to be as the Blessed Mother, to speak the words that she might have said, it really led me into a very deep connection with her. I'm not sure I would have found in so quick a time without that. So I feel really, really grateful for that opportunity.
It's beautiful. Related to that, would you agree if I said that that prayer, a topic that we want to cover today, prayer isn't just an activity, but it's the being aware of God's presence in your life? Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would. I think, you know, Dave, that one of the opening prayer that all of the Salesian schools say is, "Let us remember that we are in the holy presence of God." And for me, that is everything. That it's not as if words need to be said. It's more, as you expressed, a sense of being aware of the presence that we exist in. And that is, that's huge for me.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to not be praying then? Or are we always praying to some degree? Or is it that only when we're noticing that we're in God's presence that we are really praying? I mean, how do you think about that?
Well, I think Father John's helped me a lot with this. He often quotes Simone Weil, who said, "Attention taken to its highest degree is the same thing as prayer." Mm-hmm. And so in all the ways, for people who have not been taught how to pray, when they open their hearts and pay attention, whether it's to a fellow human being, to an animal, or to the beauty that surrounds us in the plants and the sky, that our attention given to those things and our gratitude absolutely is prayer.
What does it mean to give attention to something? What does it look like in your life?
I would say, thank you for clarifying that, because I would say it's maybe different for every person. I teach a class called Mindfulness and the Contemplative Tradition. And for me, to give attention to something is really to cultivate that deeper focus on, you know, if I'm speaking to a student in my office, I can like completely be present to that person, not just with my gaze and my attention, but I practice allowing myself to, as much as possible, to kind of just empty, so that I'm able to be aware of whatever is needed to be aware of in that moment.
Maybe we could just jump right into that because we, I think, are living in a time where multitasking is considered to be a very high virtue. And I think we all do that to a certain extent. And I think probably we've always done that since the beginning of time to a certain extent too. So I don't think it's a new phenomena, but it is interesting that I think it's encouraged now more than ever, given the devices that we have, like a smartphone where you can do so many different things seemingly at the same time. And I know that at school, I've tried to kind of push back a little bit on that by this whole way of saying like we need to go analog more, and it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to get rid of all of our digital devices. It's just like, how do we get locked in or remain locked into the one thing that we're doing? Because it's impossible to do multiple things at the exact same time, but how aware are we of the very particular moment that we're in? So could you speak of that from your own personal experience, and then also in how you try to maybe impart that way of thinking about being attentive in the midst of so much multitasking?
Thanks, John. It's a great multi-layered question. I'll just start by saying that I, as a mother of five adult sons, I have learned a lot about attention from being a parent. To be able to, and I'm sure, Dave, you experience this now, to hear a cry or a call and to try to determine, is that an emergency? Is someone having fun, or is there a problem? So that sort of open awareness of attention where you can allow different sounds and noises to filter in and be have the intention to pay attention to when you are needed, when you are actually being called. I would say that I learned from my youngest son, Buddy, that our attention is like a spotlight, that you shine the spotlight and focus it, and it can only be on one thing at a time. And when you move your attention to another thing, that takes away, that is a form of distraction. So as much as it seems possible to multitask, in fact, what's happening from a neuroscience point of view is we are really just moving the focus of the camera from place to place. So having that awareness has really helped me kind of listen and notice when I feel distracted, or when I'm trying to focus on one thing, when I feel my mind being called away. So as John and I both teach, this is attention is a muscle. And the more we practice, and there's so many ways we can practice with prayer, beginning with taking a deep breath and just taking time to focus on the fact that you are breathing is a way of practicing to increase your muscle of attention.
In such a digital age as we live in, how does one navigate, you know, being attentive to whatever they're doing, but also recognizing that we're going to be, you know, especially trying to live in the moment, being present to what's physically in front of someone, but then also recognizing there's going to be work that has to be done in the computer, or typically most people have that type of stuff. And in fact, maybe not even work, maybe it's just correspondence with others who are not here or whatever it might be. How do you, especially, I guess, in high school, I'm curious, like, how do you teach kids to negotiate that constant tension?
Well, I'm going to say from my point of view, I spend time on it with the kids. I talk to them about how important it is. I have them keep journals of where they have spent their time digitally for a 2-week period so they can see themselves where they're spending time. And then we have conversation because, as we all know, working with young people, if you tell someone something, are they going to listen? But if you allow them to discover it themselves, for them to look at their own habits and see where, you know, this caused me trouble, this was difficult. And then there are the things that I practice myself. I literally keep my phone on do not disturb. And on do not disturb, certain calls can break through if needed. But that is a practice of mine that I really think is important. Turning off notifications, there's not enough that can be said about that. That is that gives us the opportunity. So when we want to spend time on something, you know, look at our emails, let's say, we can be completely focused on that and not distracted by the actual life that we're living. So that, you know, thinking about the preciousness of time is another way that I work with the students. So they have the sense that the time we have together, whether it's in class or they're with their friends, is so precious. It's so limited. What does it mean to give yourself to that moment, whether it's prayer or a conversation? You know, what does it mean to completely let everything drop away and just be present?
If you were working at a public high school, I probably wouldn't be able to even ask this question because I would know the answer. But since you're at a Catholic high school, do you talk about, you know, prayer time and how, and you know, how the kids can make room for God in their day as part of mindfulness?
I do. And I want to say it this way. I use the backdoor approach. I set it up in a way by telling a story or talking about my own life or my children and how when I find myself distracted or struggling or sad, I need to step out. And this is actually a self-compassion practice, self-compassion used to help with prayer. So prayer as a practice where you set aside regular pieces of time in the morning, in the evening. Another part that I do that I find really helpful to talk about prayer is gratefulness or gratitude, that to think back on their day and find three or four moments that really stood out to them. What that does to all of our brains is really helps us begin to look for the good in the day, rather than just, you know, being aware of all the difficult things. So looking for the good and the gratefulness practice, which is also prayer.
Just riffing off of that, do you feel as if prayer is, in its very essence, a way to kind of always help us to remind ourselves that we're not alone, that in any moment, no matter how bad it is, there is still something that we can access that will give us some type of strength or some type of way forward? Like, does that make sense? Like, I was inspired by what you were saying, like, you know, we can easily focus on all the overwhelming bad things happening on through our day. And how do we cultivate gratefulness to be able to recognize all the good things that are happening? Would you say that maybe like the goal of prayer is that in any moment in time, no matter what's happening, there is a way through that's being offered to us if we somehow allow ourselves to fall through it in some way, or to be able to move through it. Would that be a one way of approaching prayer?
John, it's really a great question. I believe that what we began with, remembering that we are in the holy presence of God, the awareness of the presence of God will help us, not just our students, but each one of us, know that we are not alone. And in that space where we are struggling or having a difficult time, and we feel like we need to remember that we're in the presence of God, cultivating the practice of recognizing that we are never alone is in itself prayer. For myself, I say an awful lot of Hail Marys. For myself, I find it the most comforting prayer. And because of need and practice, I maybe I'm not exaggerating, 50 times a day, I'll go into that space where I allow myself to pray and to say a Hail Mary, remembering that I'm not alone, remembering that God and the Blessed Mother are with me always. And for me, that that is an ongoing, I will say, conversation and a recognition, I want to say, of the beingness, rather than prayer as separate from our life, that it is within us and exudes from us. And I, for me, that's my practice.
I love what you're saying, Kathy. And you mentioned that you, at you know, young age of 16, you felt called into what God had in store for you. And that's kind of this overarching, maybe vocation, we could call it. But at the same time, every on a day-to-day basis, we need to be, you know, kind of minding the call, so to speak, to that we are in God's presence. And I'm just reminded of something that Thich Nhat Hanh said in his book, Living Buddha, Living Christ. He said he loves traveling in Europe because the constant church bells that would go off would be, he would think of it as a mindfulness bell, and it's rather than it being a distraction or some kind of, you know, auditory problem, it would actually just be a way for him to enter into, you know, meditation. And I'm wondering if you look at your day that way too, you know, in these moments that you find, you know, going to Our Lady.
I absolutely do. Thich Nhat Hanh is one of my teachers. I was very blessed to spend a week with his community and with Thich Nhat Hanh himself. And so one practice that not only Thich Nhat Hanh, but also the LaSallian community with who run the school that I'm at, run the school, that's a funny thing. Anyway, is that we can set up those opportunities to be like mindfulness bells, that when you put your key into a door and walk through, that's an opportunity for prayer. That when you sit down at a meal, that is an opportunity for prayer, not just, you know, thank you for this food, but for all the people who brought this food to my table, for those who planted it and grew it and, you know, purchased it and sold it, and all of the things that have to happen for any bite of food that we take. And so if we can do maybe, and John, you might speak to this, what is a sort of a monastery sort of thing where there are times set during the day that are set aside for eating, praying, sleeping. We can do this as people in our own lives. Certainly when I get into the car at the end of the day, I think through my day and I'm grateful for the difficult things as well as the blessings that have come my way. And as I drive home in the evening, I look at the people that I'm passing and I am actively praying for them. If, you know, there are certain communities where people are really struggling and they will never know. They will never know, but I know that I can hold them in my heart and in my, you know, with compassionate love, pray for them in that moment as my car passes by. So, you know, I think the awareness in the intention should be an awareness to not just, oh, how can I do this, but actually looking at our lives and seeing, when do I already do this? You know, when I hold my friend's new baby, you know, what a blessing and what a prayer that is of thanksgiving and prayers and blessings for the future for that child. We are being human beings. We have these incredible opportunities throughout our day just because we breathe and we live and we eat and we sleep. That's built into our day, opportunities for prayer.
Yeah, that's some really great insights there. I mean, and making prayer not just something possible, but very practical in that way. But let's unravel that a little bit more. Do you feel as if there needs to be set aside time for intentional prayer. You mentioned about the monastery, and there's times for intentional prayer. It's usually communal prayer where they're praying the Psalms. Do we have to work the muscle of prayer in a very intentional way that seems to be almost segmented from the rest of our day, so that when we are partaking in our day, we're more prayerful, so to speak? Like, what does that look like? Because, for example, most people gauge prayer on how much time they're spending doing it, meaning how much time they're in church or how much time they're kind of praying, when they wake up in the morning or before they go to bed. And they look at that as being some type of way to be able to say that they've been praying that day, because they have segmented intentional times for it. What is the role of segmented intentional time for prayer, if we know that our whole life is really prayer, right?
I think, John, it's a really great question. If only we knew that our whole life was prayer. Not everyone understands that because of segmented prayer. Some people who live very prayerful lives aren't aware that they are praying throughout their life, that that's how they're living their life. It's been said that if we can begin our day with God, that 5 minutes spent with the Holy Spirit in the morning can guarantee that our thoughts will be thoughts of the Holy Spirit throughout the day. I believe mornings are very important. As Father Ray East used to say, even to say, thank God that last night was not my last night, and that the sheets I'm wrapped in are not my wrapping sheets. To be grateful that we are awake in the morning. We all wake up in the morning. That can be also, you know, the important prayer. And the same thing with the evening times. I have appreciated in the times that I've been on retreat or in this community in which we start every class with prayer. I appreciate those times. And I think that I would be maybe, I would like the discipline that I've experienced when I study with monastery groups or with, you know, different organizations. I appreciate when I went to Lourdes and there were so many times in the day where we gathered together to pray. I believe there's great power in that. And I would say I am blessed because I teach theology. I get to talk about prayer and pray with groups of people every single day as part of my life. So I don't know what it would be like to not do what I do, how I would appreciate being formed in a way where segmented prayer became a part of my day. Say that.
What about, how would you talk about prayer in the context of praying for someone else? You mentioned about how when you drive home, you're praying for the people that you see maybe in other cars or people on the street. And what does that mean to you to be praying for other people? How, so many people will always kind of question the value of that. Like, what are our prayers actually doing when we see someone suffering? So many people, you know, always get frustrated. Like, if you really want to do something, you should stop and get out of the car and give the person at least some type of money or something like that, right, who's suffering. So there's this whole, always this kind of tension between prayer and action. And how do you kind of look at the power of praying for someone without you physically necessarily taking action to, let's just say, meet their need at that moment?
I feel for me, my presence is also a prayer. I believe that I have invited into my heart and into my body the Blessed Mother, the Holy Spirit. I feel like I walk with the saints. I believe that. So if I'm passing, when I walk down the hallways, and I say this to my students for themselves, everyone here in the high school needs prayers. So what would it be like to walk past and to yourself or for them or in your mind's eye to whisper prayers of gratefulness, of support, of strength? I will say things like, God bless you. May God bless you. I will, like, those are the utterings that come from my mouth. And I, when I do that, I hold it so sacredly. I am not one who could possibly know what the best possible outcome for someone else is. As we all know, John, our heartbreaks are often our guides in life. Like, I don't know what is the suffering that this individual needs to hold on to allow them to do the next best thing for them, whatever that is. I don't have that wisdom. So for me, I hardly ever pray for a particular intention, just for a holding and a blessing and a presence.
Do you encounter any misconceptions about prayer, either with students or with other people that you work with?
Dave, I think I might have addressed that a little bit earlier, but I'll say I taught a class called Prayer and Spirituality to high school students for about 15 years. So I had thousands of students. And I think what I hope is that if people come in with misunderstandings, that they can begin to see that, as I've said, gratefulness is prayer. Like, caring for someone, acts of service is prayer. Giving your attention to someone who's struggling and needs your help, that also is prayer. Reminding yourself that we are in the holy presence of God, that is prayer. Was it Meister Eckhart who said, even if all you said was thank you, that would be prayer enough? Mm-hmm. I think opening someone's heart in that way allows other things to kind of enter that might be really helpful. So in fact, instead of having young people think, oh, they're not religious and they're not spiritual because their family never raised them that way, because they never were encouraged or taken to church. I share my story where it wasn't till I was a junior in high school and I was kind of awakened by an invitation that I began to understand how I was called into this life. So assuring them that wherever they've been, that is not, you know, they can choose another way of being in the presence of God.
That is the right way to say it. You know, part of, I feel like what I've taken on as a project in the process of doing this with John, this Religion to Reality project, is to recognize, to stop, at least for myself, and to try to encourage others to stop thinking about our spiritual lives, because it makes it sound like we have a spiritual life and we have the rest of our lives or other lives or something like that. No, we only have one integrated life, hopefully integrated. And so I think what you're saying is, as soon as you start realizing that it's not just prayer when we say, okay, God, I'm going to set time aside and pray now, but just allowing all these things in, like you said, letting the presence of God be pervasive in our mind, that is a way to start to connect those, what seems like different parts of our lives.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's great, Dave. And I think when we separate our spiritual essence from everything else, then students, young people can say, I'm not spiritual. I'm not spiritual. I don't know, John, if you hear that, but I hear that a lot. And that is the one time that I will kind of push back and say, you don't get that choice. Like, this is part of your being human in this world. We all have this essence, whether you spend time with it, cultivate it, you know, like feed it, that's something else. But yeah, so I think that it's understanding that it is such a part of our humanity is a really great gift to everyone.
What would be a good entry point for people to understanding their life as being spirit filled or spiritual? Like, what would be a good way to kind of enter into that space with someone who doesn't think that?
I would say that helping sometimes, let's say, people in general will offer science as the opposite of spirit. And if they feel very scientific, then they believe like that's their God or that's the way they go. But to my favorite scientists understand the meaning of awe, that when they began to see how life has been created, to really look deeply into any into the stars or into life in the ocean or in our bodies, the experience of awe is life-changing, because it immediately lifts your spirit and takes you to a place where at that point one can say, well, that is, yeah, I know what that feels like. And that's kind of the beginning journey. One of my teachers, Dacher Keltner out of Berkeley, has written a great book on awe. And what he teaches is that if we're lucky, we have two or three experiences of awe a day. But what we need is maybe 50 experiences of awe per day. So finding opportunities to go to the ocean, to watch the sunset, to take a moment with a flower, you know. So for my students, I let them have that experience. It's like we're having an awe workshop. Go, you know, find, show me the awe that you experience in your life. And then, you know, like, bring that back to us and let's talk about it. Now I don't have to convince them that they have a spirit. Now they understand that all of life is this.
Yeah. I mean, probably not good advice for high school students, but having a kid is really good for cultivating awe many times a day in your life. I'm guessing that one of the scientists that you love is Einstein. I have a quote that I just came across today from him. He said, "One cannot help but be in awe when he contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries merely to comprehend a little of this mystery each day. Never lose a holy curiosity. Don't stop to marvel."
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Dave. I really, send that to me if you could. Really like that. I think bringing in the concept of holiness when we discuss awe and prayer is incredibly important, to understand that all of life is holy and that therefore we see ourselves also as holy. All of us are so critical of what we look like or what we do or how we spend our time, and most particularly our young people, that to help them look at the times in their life where they take care of their grandmother or they're there for their parents or, you know, caring for their baby brothers or sisters and beginning to see these moments as holy moments, that it doesn't just happen in the church. It doesn't just happen when you're praying. So really, I think what I'm saying, which sounds good to me, is opening up our entire world and seeing the holiness, the ways in which we are blessings to others. I ask them that question, how are you a blessing to others? That's a great question to ask, because they can begin to see the way they are holy in their lives, that they are showing love. And sometimes it's accompanying their grandparents to church. Maybe it doesn't have great meaning, but they go with their grandparents because, or they say the rosary every night with their family because it's important to parts of their family. I promise them that is holy. That is a blessing. That is prayer, even if you're there because you love someone who wants you there.
Hmm. You mentioned the rosary just now. You mentioned saying, you know, up to 50 Hail Marys a day earlier, which is pretty much a rosary. And when we did the study on discipleship, we found, so this is on mass attending Catholics, so not exactly the same population as your students. Also, we weren't capturing that age group either. So these are every other generation older than that, basically. But what they said when we asked about what type of prayer had an impact on their faith lives, the most cited response was the rosary, and personal prayer was less frequently cited. And I wondered if you had any thoughts of why that might be.
I think the rosary can really serve as a grounding prayer. I know that I often use it that way. So when I pray, I put both feet on the ground and I adjust my posture and I take a deep breath because I want to be intentional about it. And someone who is going to say a whole rosary, maybe they're holding on to something. They're able to count beads, so it's very tactile. So it's calling so many parts of them, you know, their sense of being grounded, their tactile sense, their saying the words and the repetitiveness of it. I think it's very powerful for all those reasons that it's, I tell my students, if they don't understand what a Hail Mary is, it doesn't matter. Say it anyway. Just say it and let it be revealed to you. Like I'm not going to be saying, oh, this is what it means and this is why you should enjoy it and appreciate it. I say, just let it be revealed to you. Let it come to you. The Holy Spirit speaks to us in so many ways. But that's the reason I think the rosary is so powerful.
Have you noticed any trends when it comes to the way people typically like to pray over either generationally or any other, you know, way that you look at it? Have you seen, I don't know, you've taught for many years. Do people pray differently than they used to? Do you feel like people your age don't pray like people my age don't pray like people your kids' age? You know, I wonder about that.
It's hard for me to say. I always tell John, I wasn't raised in the church. I came to it later. So everything was new for me. And in the beginning, and I want to say this, I feel like there's so many parts that I don't fully understand because I wasn't like raised with them, something like that. But what I have noticed is, and I do not mean to say this in any negative way, but certain generations, maybe the generations who raised the students that I'm teaching now, they chose not to pass on their traditions to their children, maybe for lots of different reasons. And I don't have the statistics on that, except that I've experienced that. Why do kids come to a Catholic high school? The number one reason is to get a good education. Like, I think that's different from it used to be. It mm-hmm. used to be they wanted to have, you know, something else given to the kids. That reason is maybe fourth or fifth. And that all has to do with parents and people wanting what they feel is best for their kids and not really knowing what the future is going to look like. So I did experience a change during COVID. During COVID, I think we all, because it was a global phenomenon, that I am not the only one who understood how important it was to gather as a community. And at simultaneously, and I know John can attest to this, I was very grateful for technology, for giving us the opportunity to gather, and all the ways that my heart was deeply touched during COVID and afterwards, and just the desire and the hope that people could awaken to that need to be somehow in community in whatever way that takes place. So I hope that that is an outcome of our time in the shutdown, that there is more of a desire for sure for parents with their children to understand how important it is to gather with like-minded people and support each other. I think we haven't gotten to this yet, but I'll just say the idea of compassion during the time when everyone is suffering is, we all can talk about that now. As a result of COVID, I know what these kids were doing when they were in seventh and eighth grade, and they wished that they were at graduation or with their peers. You know, to see that we are people who are meant to be called together, to pray together, to work together, to help each other, to love each other in our world. We are called to that. And my prayer and hope is, my really big hope is that there is enough of that inspiration from the Holy Spirit and our recently deceased Holy Father to say that hope is alive, hope is real, and that however life, our life, our prayer life, our church life is being and has been transformed, may our hearts truly be open to that and looking at the new ways that we can gather together and pray together and listening to the call of the Holy Spirit in this time. That's also prayer, right?
You just said the magic word that keeps coming up for us over and over on this podcast is listening. It is totally magical. And yet not, right? It's something ground, it's spiritual, it's supernatural, but it's not magical. I think this is every bit of God's intention, his design, you know, for us to be able to be there for one another. I mean, how can we, right? Like with Paul, we recognize everything has been a gift. And so if we're receiving, then we must, like, listening is like a great word for receiving everything we get, right?
Yeah, I think the listening and attention are tied together completely. That in the different ways that to set aside time to be still and to listen is prayer.
Religion to Reality is an initiative of DeSales Media created by me, Dave Pliske, and is produced and edited by Connor Donnelly. If you found value in our conversation, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you love the show, ratings and reviews go a long way toward letting others know about the show. Go to religiontoreality.org for more details and resources.